Good afternoon, and my name is Ruoyu Wang, and my nickname is Fish. I'm very honored to be here to make a presentation on our paper, which named Steal This Movie, Automatically Bypassing DRM Protection in Streaming Media Services. And this work is actually done by Young, Chris, and Giovanni, and me from UC Santa Barbara. The reason why I said I have no affiliation for now is like I'm just graduated from Tsinghua University, and I'm not yet a PhD student now. Okay, so let's first take a look at the digital right management. For some stuff like, what is a digital right management and how it works for streaming media services? And how people usually bypasses the DRM and what our solution would be like. Okay, so here's the graph. And firstly, we have encrypted information flow coming from internet. Okay, let's say it's coming from internet. And the media players will get encrypted media stream out of the flow, which we call it, well, demultiplexing. And so this is where the DRM comes into functioning. The DRM could get encrypted media stream decrypted into decrypted media stream. And after that, the media stream is decoded into raw frames. And it will be finally further processed and is put onto the screen. And that's what we see, right? The final pictures and animations on the television. Okay, so regarding DRM bypasses, there are several motivations for doing that. It could actually be archiving videos or just for fun, like the kind of hacking spirit, or some people just use it to make a profit. Okay, so most of the DRM bypasses are solution specific, just like the DCSS, which is used to crack the DVD some time ago, and the Spotify, which is used for cracking the very famous streaming services Spotify, and so on. Yeah, there is actually very famous event called the HDCP master key leaking. So the problem of these kind of solutions is that you have to manually crack each kind of DRM mechanism and design different bypasses. So that is actually not a kind of generalized approach, right? And a general bypass would be analog loophole. A very extreme case of analog loophole is that you could record the protected video using your camcorder. And after that, you could play back the video as long as you want. So however, you have to spend a lot of time in re-encoding the video you get. And usually you will lose the high definition, right? So these are not a good idea. So as what is shown just now, the DCSS and other stuff will replace the actual client completely. And we'll carry on the attack basic there at the multiplexing part. And analog loophole could actually happen either after the television or before the television in the playing back process. However, actually, there is a kind of very big block that is not attacked. We name it DRM mechanisms. So that's really what we did in our prototype, which is called Movie Stealer. We try to find the decrypted stream and try to dump it. All right? So usually the bypassing jobs now are done by reversers, human reversers manually. And we could say that this is really a difficult work. A lot of people just don't want to read those assembly lines every day. I mean, it's really a not good job, actually. So our movie stealer actually frees their hands from those dirty work and attacks the DRM automatically. Okay, so here are the main challenges we are facing. Firstly, the complexity. You know, media players are usually rather complicated, especially those media players with DRM features, right? They are usually very heavy and are usually very well protected. And secondly, the performance concern. Most media players are usually very demanding in performance. It's like most media players will not just function normally if we have carry on too much overhead over it. And last challenge we are facing is the generality. It's like, as we are doing research, we don't want to come up with a different solution for each kind of DRM individually. We want to come up with a generalized approach to attack DRM successfully. Okay, so actually our movie stealer comes out of a very simple intuition, which is illustrated in this slide. Like, first of all, we define buffer as a consecutive array of bytes. And for the ease of implementation inside the program, usually data are put into buffers. So are those media streams, right? And after that, the encrypted media stream must be decrypted before playing, so that the decrypted media stream is accessible at some point all through the program. And finally, if there is a way to tell whether a buffer contains meaningful media stream, then we are all set. We could simply dump that buffer, right? This is pretty easy, isn't it? So our final goal is to identify the decrypted buffer and dump it and try to reconstruct the media file out of it. Okay, so my presentation today consists of the following sections. First of all, we're going to have a quick look at the design and optimizations of MovieStealer. And after that, I'm going to show you some experimental results, which might be pretty impressive. And we'll have a quick look at the countermeasures as well. And in the end, we're going to have a look at the ethics and legality stuff. Well, I think that's very necessary here, right? So for now, let's have a look at the design of MovieStealer. So based on our intuition and goal, there are actually several steps of our approach. As I have said before, data should be put into buffer. And usually the most efficient way of manipulating buffers is through a loop. So programs need loops to access buffer. Usually we think that, wow, that is right. So that's why we have loop detection and buffer detection before we try to reason about data path. And after we get the data paths, we are going to perform statistical analysis to identify which buffer actually stores the target data we are going to dump. And after that, we will dump the data and reconstruct the target media files. So okay, first, let's move on to the first step, loop detection. Okay. So our approach is based on the previous work called loopprof. Here are the basic blocks. We define a basic block as a single entrance, single exit block of instructions. And here's a series of basic blocks that we have accessed during execution of a program. And see, you can see that there is basic B, D, C, and then basic block B, D, C, B, C, D again. And then we come across basic block A. So it's very easy to figure out that there should be a loop called basic block B and basic block C and basic block D. The loop is formed by these three basic blocks, right? Okay. So an important feature of MovieStealer is to handle the unrolled loops. I mean, loop unrolling is a pretty common optimizing feature in buffer processing. So our solution to that is we first label the basic blocks around the loop as possible unrolled parts. And afterwards, we would check if such parts really operates on the same buffer as the original loop. And whether those basic blocks actually access those original buffer as the original loop in the same access patterns. And if so, we put them together and form a new loop. Okay. And there are actually some crypto implementations that reuse the same loop for encryption and decryption as well. For example, this piece of code illustrates what happens. I mean, in this case, we cannot tell which loop is responsible for encryption and which loop is responsible for decryption. This is because they are actually the same loop, right? So if we want to dump data from that loop, we're going to mix everything together. So here is our solution. We identify loops not only by their basic blocks, as well as by their calling path. So if a loop is called by different functions, if a loop is called on different path of the calling, we consider them to be different loops. And after we get those good loops, we could come to the second step, which is buffer detection. We want to detect buffers out of a loop. Okay. So we have come up with our own algorithm of buffer detection based on access patterns. Besides the detection of normal buffers, like the normal consecutive bytes of reads, consecutive array of bytes, our algorithm could handle those cases where a buffer is not accessed consecutively as well. And also, our algorithm could even work when some bytes of the buffer is not completely accessed during a loop. I mean, that could really help to identify some special cases and some extreme cases. Okay, so the next step is to reason about the data path. This is what a data path looks like. Through a data path, input buffer is revised to output buffer in the loop. And so we create a data path for each combination of input buffer and output buffer in the loop. And after our reasoning, we could get a lot of, maybe we could get one or many data paths out of a loop, right? So in the whole program, based on our intuition, we should know that there should be at least one data path which is responsible for decryption. And the decrypted data is what we want, right? So the data goes through that data path actually gets modified completely. And our next step would be to find out that specific data path which is responsible for decryption. Okay. So how can we tell which data path is performing decryption? Well, actually, we could tell that based on the statistical features of the data itself. So first of all, I'm gonna explain a kind of like, it should be a basic concept in cryptography, which is named ciphertext indistinguishability. Well, that means the encryption output of a secure crypto system now cannot be distinguished from a series of random bytes. That is a kind of like basic requirement for most modern crypto systems. And as we know, high randomness is somewhat hard to achieve. You have to use some like pretty good pseudo-random number generators to gain enough randomness in your program if you want. Then it would be pretty easy for us to tell which buffer actually contains random data. And it is pretty safe for us to tell if the data is random, and actually we could view it as encrypted data, right? And also in our cases, media streams are always come from internet. So that brings the result that it should always be a kind of compressed. The entropy of it shouldn't be that low in order to save the bandwidth. So we could always have a very high entropy in both input and output buffer out of a decryption loop, right? Okay, that sounds nice. So this table actually illustrates the randomness and entropy of buffers of different stages. And we can have a look at it. It's like there's a different stages of downloading, of decryption, and decoding. And we actually see that in the decryption process, the randomness of data dynamically decreased, right? I mean, that's great. Because in previous steps, we have the input and output of each data path. We saved it. And afterwards, we could perform a statistical analysis on the aggregated data we have get out of the buffer. And after that, we could measure the differences in randomness and entropy along each data path. And based on these rules, we could actually tell which data path is relevant to decryption, because we see there is a drop in the randomness and the entropy keeps steady. So according to our experience, it's about 800 kilobytes of data is needed to make a reliable judgment of whether a buffer is random or not. And actually, while using the key squared randomness test to measure the randomness of each data path of each buffer. Okay, so here comes the final step. It's called the data dumping and media file reconstruction. Well, in MovieStealer, actually we show that with knowledge of target codecs as well as the media file containers format, automatic reconstruction is totally feasible. However, we have a footnote here which is said intentionally omitted. We are going to explain that later. And we have done that on all the platforms that we selected in our experiments. And I will show you what those platforms are, what those DRM platforms are in our experimental results section. OK. So this is a common workflow that when you are trying to use the MovieStealer to attack a DRM service. First, you start playing back the protected movies. And after that, you just click the Start button in MovieStealer and ask MovieStealer to begin analysis. And what you should do next is to just wait for a few minutes, and then you can harvest all those like media files that you want. And what is good is that the analysis process should only be processed once, should only be done once for each platform. And afterwards, you could harvest the media files as much as you want. Okay, so let's have a glance at the optimizations of MovieStealer. There is a very big problem of our basic approach. I mean, it is very intuitive, but there is just too much overhead. With too much overhead, we won't sniff enough data usually, and MovieStealers just don't media players just don't function normally. And actually, some media players is actually checking the performance, and it will actually adjust its resolution of the movie according to the performance of its playing back. And also, you might also get caught by the checking system of the DRM. You see, if, you see if our analysis processes for about maybe 24 hours for the first time, and they will actually know that, okay, you are watching this movie, or you are watching this 1 hour movie for 24 hours. I mean, that's amazing, right? So we have actually a long list of all the optimizations we have figured out for Movie Stealer. Of course, I'm not gonna read it and explain them one by one. So let me just pick one of them, which I'm kind of proud of, is the cost that key. It's actually a trick, okay? You should still remember that what happened in some crypto algorithms. Yes, I mean, they are using the same loop for both encryption and decryption. And we have to keep a calling stack to handle these cases, like which functions call them, which functions is the caller, which functions it's gonna return to. And however, there's actually a better way. Instead of keeping a vector or keeping a stack, it's actually enough for us to keep a dual word, which is called a cost stack key. We named it cost stack key. And when we enter a function, we actually exclusive OR the function address with that cost stack key. And after we exit the function, we will exclusive OR the function address with the cost stack key again to remove its impact. OK, so we saved a lot of operations and time of maintaining a stack. Instead of that, we use a cost stack key, and it leads to a smaller overhead. So for now, I'm going to show you some experimental results. Don't panic. And this is the first is our implementation. We implemented the movie stealer, which is our approach just now, under the Intel PIN framework. It is a dynamic binary instrumentation framework, and it is quite popular. We implemented the movie stealer and Windows 7, and our testing is carried out in a very common workstation in my lab. So actually, the evaluation, there are two parts of the evaluation. We first carried out performance evaluation on GPG to test our experiments. The reason why we're not directly carry on the optimization tests on those real DRM platforms is that those media players will just refuse to work without most of our optimizations. And after that, we tested our movie stealer on three DRM platforms. They are Microsoft Play Ready, Adobe RTMP Encrypted, and Spotify. And there are actually four streaming media service providers. There are Netflix for Microsoft Play Ready, and Hulu and Amazon Video that are using Adobe RTMP Encrypted, and finally the Spotify of its own kind of like DRM mechanism. Okay, so here's the result of the GPG experiments. We actually logged the time spent before Movie Stealer really pinpoints the certain loop that is responsible for the GPG decryption. And actually, with different optimizations, there is a really big difference in the time elapsed before you do that. And actually, we could see that those optimizations really work. A lot of time could be saved when enabling all the optimizations. It's only about 1% of the cases where only execution frequency is enabled, right? And here's the results of experiments carried out on different DRM platforms like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Video, and Spotify. And out of which there are two platforms have carried out some kind of different protections. For example, there is dynamically generated code in the Microsoft Play Ready, which is used by Netflix. And also, you should know that Spotify is actually packing by a very good packer, which is named Themida. Okay? And we have shown that Movie Stealer works fine on all those platforms we have tested on. And also, we actually logged the seconds elapsed before Movie Stealer breaks the DRM protection. Also, we could see that although we had identified some loops, we don't really have to trace them all. It's like we actually identified a lot of loops, like 1,500 or 2,200, but we only need to trace a small portion of it. And after the tracing, we could actually identify a lot of buffers, and after that, we could perform our statistical analysis and get the final result we want. And according to the data, you should only wait for about nine minutes at most before the movie stealer really breaks the DRM protection. And so afterwards, you could see that you are gonna see that movie stealer generating the stuff you want. Also the analysis is only needed to be carried on once per platform. It's really easy and fast. All right, now we are going to have a look at the countermeasures. Well, there are actually some countermeasures that aimed at that those protectors could carry on, which is aiming at either attacking the instrumentation stage of MooStealer or attacking the loop detection and buffer detection algorithms of MooStealer. For example, they could carry on some anti-debugging, some really good anti-debugging techniques on their original media player to stop MooStealer to stop MooStealer from attaching. And also, they could use virtual machine protection. They could use virtual machine protections to protect those loops, those sensitive loops. So it's like I don't think MooStealer now could work with the virtual machine protection. And also, they could also alter the layout of the buffer from consecutive array of bytes to non-consecutive bytes, array of bytes. That should also work for to attack our algorithm. And finally, there's a very good suggestion of word that is watermarking. They could actually watermark apply watermark on their original videos. So like if the video is illegally leaked, they could actually trace the sources. And finally, there is the most important part of this talk, which is the essential ethics and legality discussions. And for ethics part, we have actually made a responsible disclosure. We have contacted Microsoft, Spotify, Adobe, as well as those media services providers like Amazon, Netflix, and Hulu. And all of them, Microsoft, Spotify, and Adobe really actually responded. They tested our prototype MooStealer. They confirmed that the DRM is bypassed, and they are so nice that they provided some comments on our paper and even encouraged our publication. And we intentionally omitted some details in our paper as well as the in this presentation, for example, the reconstruction part, to give them some protection. And also, we promise there will be no tool or source release. And here's the legality stuff. We truly believe this work to be legal under DMCA, as we have consulted with the University of California Council as well as the EFF, and we want to thank them all for their precious support. And for acknowledgement, we want to thank for support from Microsoft, Adobe, and Spotify for their precious support. And I personally want to thank Kevin, Yannick, Christine, and Thorsten for the advice for my presentation. I'm kind of nervous, it's my first time, so thank you very much. And this is our contact info. Okay, thanks. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to send us an email. And so thank you all. Is there any questions? I'm very happy to take them.
Matthias Neukschantner, Vienna University of Technology. Great
Hi.
Work.
Oh, thanks.
I was wondering how big in size were the buffers that you ran your statistics on?
How big in size? You mean the source code?
No, of the buffers. So you said you have the data in memory.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering how big the chunks were that you ran your statistical analysis.
Oh yeah. On. Actually, I have said that to make a reliable judgment, you should need about like something like 800 kilobytes.
Okay.
Of data. Yeah. I mean, for a reliable judgment.
Okay. Thank you.
Neither.
Simon Chung, Georgia Tech.
Hi.
Two questions.
Okay.
One, how slow can the part that you're attacking, or how much they can obfuscate that part?
Which part?
The part that you're targeting, looking for loops and stuff like that.
So you say they could make it really, really obfuscated,
I mean,
is it
the bottleneck of the performance, or is really very fast as compared to the bottleneck of the playback?
Well, I have to admit that we have never tried to implement a DRM mechanism to try to find an answer to that question. But I would say that if they actually take some of our suggestions on the countermeasures, like they try to alter the layout of the buffer, or they try to obfuscate is better. They try to using the virtual machine protections to protect their sensitive loops. There will be much overhead. Original.
Can they bear that kind of overhead?
I don't think so. We have actually talked about it in our paper, yeah.
Okay, second question. Can your stack key mechanism handle recursion? I mean,
recursion
what would happen?
Collision?
Recursion.
Recursion, no. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't actually matter in our, at least in our experiment. who have come up with that idea, and we confirmed it worked. And
Have you bumped into recursion yet?
The thing is that for recursion, very few people would use a recursion to use the recursive functions to process data in the buffer, because they would rather do it in a loop. Yeah, that is what we see. And actually, there is a small detail that I actually said in presentation, but as you have asked this good question, I would say that we have actually, there is a bitwise operation each time when we are trying to exclusive or the address with the original callstack key.
I see.
Yeah, thank each you. Time. So it is different. Thank you.
OK, so I also have a question. So for the countermeasures, which one would be the most effective one? So it seems like all of them are related to performance.
Yeah.
That it slows down your analysis. So which of the countermeasures would you implement first, and how effective are they?
OK, thanks. I mean, I think based on all those countermeasures we have set here and all the countermeasures we have actually put in our paper, I mean, the easiest one would be just sue us. Yeah. Besides of that, I actually prefer to using the non-consecutive buffer layouts. And also, there is another approach that you could actually take is to distribute the decryption process to different loops. We cannot actually tell. For example, if you have a media file and you decrypt it in 3 or 4 or 50 different loops, we cannot really tell which part goes first and which part goes after, right? I mean, without further manual checks. But for us, I mean, the best way it should be stop us from doing that. Yeah. Thank you.
OK, and then one last question.
Kay.
So the PIN tool, how many lines of code does it have? So how complex is the tool?
I think Young knows that. And last time, Young actually runs the WC on it, right? I think it should be at least 7,000 lines of code. I implement in C++, and it actually has a controller of the implemented in C#. Yeah, that's it.
OK, so if we don't have any questions, then let's thank the speaker again.